You were a young man of 99. You didn't wait to be called up. You volunteered when you were just 16 years old. It was your sole tribute to a family tradition of generals, aviators, ambassadors, medals of honor, patriotic impulses. Your uncle Gino was involved, faultlessly, in the debacle of Caporetto. He then became governor of Cyrenaica and a senator. Officer school was your natural, inevitable outlet, but the military life was not for you, Renzo. You took after your mother, who had always been an art lover. She was a radice, an upper-middle-class family, industrious, aristocratic. One of those families that count in Milan. Your martial father reluctantly allowed you to take painting lessons from Attilio Andreoli, a capable teacher of a thoughtful student, you. Everyone remembers you as being closed off in your own world. Your dearest friends were afraid you might seem cold, detached, aloof, even snobbish. From the heights of your lanky physique, your blonde hair, your aristocratic bearing, you lived your life without ever taking advantage of that fact. You didn't feel the urge for the limelight, for acclaim, as did many artists of your age, who spent their time not only on research, but also on public relations. You stayed inside your studio on Corso Garibaldi, looking for balance, harmony, composure. You tried to say new things by using the vocabulary that came before you. Adelante con juicio, the tradition that could not be abandoned yet had to be updated. You painted that way, showing how a certain bourgeoisie of the city liked and still likes to imagine the world for itself. Of course you knew everyone. You were part of the cultural gatherings at the restaurant of Via Bagutta, a member of the Permanente starting in the 20s, showing your works there for decades, preferably in group shows. You hated solo shows, too much attention. It was as if you were trying to make people forget about you, to never seem too aggressive. You were a young man of 99. You had experienced the slaughter of the Great War. The things of the world just seemed futile, perhaps. You lived and painted throughout your life in the building on Corso Garibaldi, a neighborhood seething with life, as rambunctious as you were quiet. Always a working-class zone, just outside the ring of the canals. It was no coincidence that Laura Solera Mantegazza lived here. Even today, on her house at Corso Garibaldi 73, one can see the words etched in the stone by the people of the city. This building was the home for many years and the first infant's shelter founded by Laura Solera Mantegazza, the true mother of the poor. It was no coincidence that in 1928, in one of the courtyard buildings, Gino Bramieri was born, and that here, near your house, lived Salvatore Quasimodo. It was no coincidence that in front of your place there was the Teatro Fossati, which became famous for its operettas and comedies in local dialect before becoming a movie theatre, followed by abandon and rebirth as a theatre studio thanks to Giorgio Strehler. Even after World War II, Corso Garibaldi was still bustling with shops, workshops, penniless artists, artisans, and ordinary people who were ready to take to the streets to protest against the horrors programmed in the Master Plan of 53, which called for total demolition of the area, widening the street to transform the neighborhood into a development for residences and office buildings. Here, many years after your time, Pietro Valpreda made coffee and talked about soccer, anarchy, and the underworld with his customers. They've called you a chiarista, the Italian Matisse, but you were not really a part of any artistic movement. You were not a futurist, abstractionist, expressionist, not a neoclassical artist. You painted, closed up in your studio. You just painted, Renzo. And if you were not satisfied with the results, you had no qualms about destroying a canvas. Maniacal, a perfectionist, In your will, you left instructions to destroy all the paintings you had not signed. The signature was the seal, proving the conclusion of the struggle between you and forms, colours. You did not paint views, but states of mind, closed gates that offer only a glimpse of what lies beyond, beyond the landscape. What did you see there, beyond it? What was the world you never managed to show us? No one could enter your laboratory of anxieties at Corso Garibaldi II. Not your beloved brother, Gino. You dedicated a painting prize to him after his death. Not your devoted sister, Carla. Not even your closest friends. Not Dino Buzzati. Not Leonardo Borghese. No one, except Adolfo. Already from the portrait you made of him when he was a child with sparkling eyes, it is clear how much you loved him. He was the son of your sister, the wife of Pietro, the engineer who had an even more cumbersome surname than you did. Pini. As in Paolo, the neurologist who dedicated his labours to the least fortunate of the city, the man everyone wanted as the mayor of the Liberation, had he not died precisely in 1945, a hospital was named for him. And as in Gaetano, Paolo's father, founder in positivist philanthropic Milan of the School for Rickets Sufferers, and then the Orthopedic Clinic, Italy's oldest institute of orthopedic medicine. You were very attached to your sister's family. Pietro himself designed and reworked the facade of your house, the building where you all lived at the start of the 1920s, when Adolfo was just a pup crawling around the house. Those were the years in which it was no rarity to see you at the tables of the Teobroma Cafe, between Via Borgonovo and Fatebene Fratelli, the hangout of the Naturaliter anti-fascist artists, chatting with Leonardo Borghese. That is how Raffaele de Grada remembered you, cordial, direct, on the streets of Milan, with Orio Vergani and Arturo Martini. But no one ever entered your studio, only Adolfo, who grew up and opted for an education in science, as his surname suggested. This allowed you to converse with him as if you were two islands, only apparently distant, but actually quite close, due to mutual fondness and curiosity about what really lies behind appearances. Everyday affairs were foreign to you. Your nephew recalls that you had no idea what was there under the hood of a car, and that you never learned how to drive, but you enjoyed talking with him about physiology, quantum mechanics, color theory. For you, painting was an act of philosophical composition. You are not interested in style. Taste is a virtue of the weak, you jotted down in a quick note. Over the years, the human figures vanished from your landscapes, and only pure things remained, the force of their inevitable inertia. You didn't depict everyday life, or the city that changed so suddenly in those days. You stopped to sketch the railroad station in a town outside the city, Cormano, now in the middle of the metropolis, where you spent childhood summers. Or you escaped to Paris, your elective city, where you bought an apartment at Montmartre. You went there continuously, not so much to study under André Lhot. You never became a French painter, nor did you ever want to, but because perhaps you could paint en plein air, a perfect stranger, so nobody would pass by and engage you in useless chatter. Or you went to the Palazzola, the family villa at Stresa. That was the sum of your sentimental geography, in that triangle of places. Few rare trips towards the south of Italy, towards the capital. Ongoing returns in your painted correlates, ever emptier and therefore ever more packed with meaning. Melancholy. It is as if I had a pane of glass between myself and the world, you told your nephew one day. I am very aware of suffering. The main emotion in me is suffering. Adolfo, more than your own fraternal friends, you had rare but enduring friendships, was the only and ultimate real foothold for you in the world. While you were taciturn and thoughtful, Adolfo brought his vitality, his outgoing youthful spirit, into your studio. After college, he had obtained a lecturing post in physiology, but as a perfect bon vivant, he was interested in everything. Literature, music, art, socializing. When he was older, he wrote 2 novels, and he traveled, often, continuously. He had houses in Paris, London, Saint-Tropez, Miami, San Michele di Pagana, Stresa, San Remo. He knew everybody, associated with everybody. You were never like that, Renzo, but you didn't blame him. You were curious about his stories of the world outside those gates you painted. You chased the truth beyond those walls with sharp shards of broken glass embedded at the top. But you understood those who, like Adolfo, lived their lives to the fullest, completely immersed in existence without mediations. Once, in a notebook, you wrote that every work of human culture should always be posthumous. It was as if death, retroactively, could truly define the meaning of a life. In an increasingly frenetic city, your wager seemed hopeless. It almost looked as if you had done everything to make the world forget you. But Adolfo didn't forget you. His worldly vitality was needed to conserve the memory of your passage on this earth. As the heir to your legacy and the sizable family fortune, the last inhabitant of the house at Corso Garibaldi II, in his will, he decided to donate everything to conserve your memory for posterity, precisely as your friend Dino Buzzati wrote at the time of your death, in the hope that what Bon Giovanni did not have in life and did not even desire will be granted to him by time. You had faith in Adolfo and his deeper sensibilities, Renzo, and you were right.